You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of the Locked On Clippers podcast. Today is Wednesday, January 3rd, 2018, and I'm your host, Lucas Han. You can find me on Twitter at Lucas J. Han, and you can read my articles at ClipsNation.com, as well as follow along on Twitter at ClipsNationSBN. Today, we're going to talk about the Clippers' win over the Memphis Grizzlies last night, and get ready for a crucial month in the Clippers' season by looking over their upcoming schedule for January. To close the show, I'm going to take a listener request for a segment and talk about the Clippers' options going forward with their two-way players, CJ Williams and Jameel Wilson. So first, getting started with this win last night over the Memphis Grizzlies. This is another game, kind of like several of the recent games that the Clippers have played, where they didn't necessarily play exceptionally well, you know, against the Lakers, against Charlotte, and now against Memphis in each of the last three games. Not three of the Clippers' best games of the season, but three games where they did enough to get wins over teams that are beneath them in the standings and keep trying to build back into being in the playoff race. Right now, they're really close with New Orleans, just one loss behind New Orleans and Portland, who are in 7th and 8th, two losses behind Oklahoma City and Denver, who are in 5th and 6th. We'll get into that a little bit more in the second part of the show when we talk about the Clippers' schedule and how they can try to build into the playoff race. But specifically on this Grizzlies game, I think, you know, what's worrisome maybe about these games where the Clippers aren't playing so well is not that they are bad per se, because they're playing well in stretches, but it's that there are stretches where the offense, even with Milos Teodosic out there, seems to be really, really struggle to get good shots, and they go through these dry spells. So we saw this in the second quarter against Charlotte on Sunday, and then in the third quarter against Memphis last night, where even with Teodosic on the floor, or, you know, against Charlotte, it was some with the second unit and some with the first unit, more so with just the first unit in this game against Memphis, but the offense really struggling to get going, and you kind of put yourself in a situation where you figure, when Teodosic and Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan are all on the floor together, you should be able to score. You should be able to get shots. You shouldn't have, you know, every game a quarter where you're left with like 10 or 13 points. That was the case on Sunday, and it was almost the case last night until the bench came in and went on a little bit of a run to close the third quarter. So that's something that the Clippers, you know, might need to figure out. I think it might have a little bit to do with who is in these lineups with them. Not necessarily always a lot of spacing or offensive creativity. CJ Williams is okay, but Wesley Johnson out there is not particularly impressive on the offensive end. So that's something that Doc Rivers may have to adjust for going forward. I also think, you know, speaking of CJ Williams, he had a phenomenal game. Definitely his best game as a pro. He had 18 points, 2 rebounds, 2 steals, 7 of 10 shooting, 3 of 4 from deep, especially early in the game. He had 12 points in the first quarter. His career high coming into tonight was 12 points. So he's a guy who we'll talk, you know, a little bit more about what the Clippers' options are with him at the end of the show. But just going out there and having an 18-point performance, if he can keep the ball rolling in the next couple of weeks as it nears his deadline and the Clippers are forced to make a decision, it's going to be very, very difficult for them to justify sending him back down to Agua Caliente, especially because Doc Rivers seems to be relying on him so much. Wesley Johnson, in a way, Wesley struggles partially create this opportunity for CJ, even though there's injuries elsewhere on the roster with Patrick Beverley, Austin Rivers, and Danilo Gallinari that are allowing there to be opportunities for both Johnson and Williams at this moment. Part of the reason why you worry so much about losing CJ long-term is that even when Austin and Gallinari come back, you're going to need a backup small forward. And Wesley Johnson just doesn't look like it right now. He looks lost on both ends of the floor. He's 2 for 32 from three-point range since November 25th. In 16 minutes last night, he was a minus 17. The Clippers won this game by 8 points. That means that in the 32 minutes that Wesley Johnson was on the bench, the Clippers won by 25. There was a blowout in those 32 minutes when Wesley Johnson was on the bench. In the 16 minutes when Wesley Johnson played, the Grizzlies blew out the Clippers by 17. That's pretty indicative of the level of performance that he brought last night. So that's definitely something that's worrisome going forward. And then I think the other really, you know, Blake Griffin had a pretty good game, 21 points, 8 assists, 6 rebounds. It wasn't anything spectacular, but he definitely looks fully back from his injury. And, you know, eventually he'll break out and have one of his big 35-point games. But this is kind of a more solid routine game for him. Tej Dosic, nice to see Milos hit some shots. He struggled in the mid-range, but 3 of 8 from deep, 13 points, 6 assists, 5 rebounds. A big part of that third quarter struggle seemed to come from a little bit too Milos heavy on the offense. A lot of shots from him where it seemed like every possession was trying to end in either a Milos shot or a Milos assist. And a lot of what he does best that he brings to the team is just the ball moving in general. And everyone seems a little bit more willing to pass and run to open spots when he's on the floor, whether he's getting the assist or not. So I don't think you want to put the ball in Milos' hands too much. But the guy who really was the player of the game in this game was Lou Williams. He had 33 points on 8 of 15 shooting. He went to the free throw line 15 times. He made all 15. He also had 6 assists. And this is a guy who has just been phenomenal all season, really, but especially lately. In the last 6 games, averaging 31 points. I think I don't know how many 30-point games he has. Yeah, he has 8 30-point games off the bench this season, which isn't including at least one or two that he has as a starter. He has 18 career 30-point games off the bench, which is the most by any active NBA player. And again, 8 of those have come this season. So if his 18 career games, 8 of them this season is absolutely remarkable. There's an article up on ClipsNation.com today from Robert Flom about why Lou Williams should be getting all-star consideration. It's really, you know, it sounds maybe a little bit crazy when you just say the name Lou Williams and all-star, because it just doesn't seem to go together. But if you look at his numbers, he's averaging 22 points and 5 assists. He has a PER of 22. He's been probably the Clippers' best player because Blake Griffin has missed time. And he's shooting 45% from the field and 41% from deep. Those are, if Damian Lillard had a season where he averaged 22 points, 5 assists, and shot 45% from the field and 41% from deep, no one would blink. That would be like normal Damian Lillard, normal Kyrie Irving, that kind of level of performance. If Kemba Walker did that, that would be a good season for Kemba Walker. And these are guys who always get all-star consideration. So Lou Williams, it's remarkable, and it's as unexpected to me as anyone, but that's the level of play that he's brought this season in 35 games, which is not a small sample size. So he should definitely be getting that consideration. Next, I want to talk about the Clippers' upcoming schedule in January. But first, I want to remind all of you to check out the Locked On NBA social media pages. We have a brand new Twitter handle at Locked On NBA Net, as well as a new Facebook page, Locked On NBA Network. Be sure to go follow and click like so that you can get all of the latest content from the Locked On NBA channel. Fantasy basketball fans, listen up. If you love fantasy basketball, then you need to try my new favorite app, Draft. It's daily fantasy basketball, but not like the other guys. On Draft, you play real live snake drafts with other people, just like in your season-long league. Here's how it works. It's a draft that lasts for just one night, and there's no management. You just set your lineup and forget about it. Once you're done drafting, that's it. There's no trades, no waiver wire, nothing to worry about. Draft even takes care of last-minute injuries for you. Drafts start every few minutes, so you can go join one right now. And the best part is that you can play for cold, hard cash. Entry fees start from just $1, so there's a draft out there for everyone. There's no salary caps, and you play in a real-life snake draft, just like you play with your friends in a season-long league. So come and join me on Draft today. You can download the app anytime. Just search Draft in your app store and join a game in minutes, or you can play right from your computer on Draft.com, whichever you prefer. For a limited time only, all new players get a free entry into a draft when you make your first deposit, but you have to use my promo code LOCLIPPERS. That's right, play a real money game for free just by using my promo code LOCLIPPERS when you make your first deposit in Draft. Now, I do want to move on a little bit and talk about the Clippers roster options and maybe some moves that could happen regarding CJ, Jameel, Bryce, Wes, and Willie. But first, I want to take a look at the upcoming January schedule for the team. So the Clippers obviously are coming off of one of their easiest stretches of the year that just ended with this win over Memphis last night. They had in a 7-game stretch, they only played one playoff team, the Houston Rockets, and they played 7 lottery teams, not even teams that are in contention for playoff spots, but teams that have records well below them. They played Memphis twice, Charlotte, the Lakers, Sacramento, and Phoenix, and predictably, the Clippers came out of this 7-game stretch with a 6-1 record. Now, they didn't lose the game that we thought they would lose, they managed to actually beat the Houston Rockets in Houston. But then on the second night of a back-to-back, the next night, they fell by 3 points to the Memphis Grizzlies. So they were that close to a 7-0 stretch. But still, 6-1 over the seven-game stretch is par for the course. Very, you know, I'm very pleased with it. It puts them at 17-19 heading into the more difficult stretch of January. Unfortunately, this next stretch of January is a lot more difficult. They have their next game tomorrow night against the Oklahoma City Thunder, and then two games in the next week against the Golden State Warriors. So, you know, they're definitely going to be at a point where the climb towards 500 is going to hit a couple of roadblocks. Now, if, you know, that Oklahoma City game is a winnable game, especially if Austin Rivers plays, and he's currently listed as questionable, but it's a difficult one. What we're really looking at is they're probably likely to lose that game to Oklahoma City and lose both games to Golden State. They do have a couple winnable games coming up, though. They play the Atlanta Hawks on the 8th in between those Golden State games, and then after Golden State, they play Sacramento twice in a row. Those are three teams, kind of like the teams we just talked about that the Clippers played in their most recent stretch, that they should absolutely win. So you're looking at, if they can, you know, if they can beat Oklahoma City, assuming they lose both games to Golden State and then are able to take care of business against those other teams, they could be at a 21-21 record heading into their January 15th game against the Houston Rockets. If they lose that game to Oklahoma City, they'd be at 20-22, which is pretty much par for the course with where they are right now, 17-19, with that two-game margin between their wins and their losses. Now, this game against Houston is really interesting on January 15th because, again, it's a game that you probably should lose. Houston's a very good team. But because James Harden has a hamstring injury and he's probably not going to be back for that game, you have to wonder how potent their offense is going to be. So we'll probably learn a lot more in the next coming weeks about how Houston is playing with Chris Paul leading the offense without James Harden. Obviously, they're still going to be a good team, but I think when you take James Harden out of the equation and you leave just Chris Paul there with the rest of the supporting cast, they're a good but beatable team as opposed to being one of the super teams in the NBA, which is the level that they're at when they're totally healthy, or at least the level that they were playing at early in the season when they were totally healthy, even for stretches without Chris Paul. What really gets big, though, is that, you know, kind of ignoring that Houston game, because I think that's probably the biggest wild card, but the Clippers are either 20-22 or 21-21 after January 13th against Sacramento. I think that's probably a safe bet. It would be pretty disappointing if they were 19-23. It would be pretty shocking if they were 22-20, because that would have meant that they beat Golden State in one of those matchups. The close to the month is where you get the really, really big games. So they've got another game against Boston. That's probably a loss. They've got another game against Memphis, which is a game that they should probably win again. What it really comes down to is games against Denver, Utah, Minnesota, New Orleans, and Portland. Denver right now is in fourth place in the West. Minnesota's in fourth place. Denver's in sixth place. Portland is in seventh place. New Orleans is in eighth place. The Clippers are in ninth place. And Utah is in tenth place. So that means going back and factoring in the Clippers game tomorrow against Oklahoma City, this month, the Clippers, who are in ninth place, have head-to-head matchups against 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, and 10th place. It's pretty safe to say that these games, you know, this stretch, especially the last 2 weeks where all of those head-to-head matchups take place except for the Oklahoma City one, this stretch could determine the Clippers season. Because if they're able to sweep through these teams, if they can, you know, Utah is probably a game that they need to win because Utah's behind them right now, but if they can take head-to-head games against Denver, Minnesota, New Orleans, and Portland, they could end January well above, they could end January basically in fifth place, or at least in sixth place behind Oklahoma City, because those are teams that they'd be passing. You know, Portland and New Orleans only have one fewer loss than the Clippers. If the Clippers give them a head-to-head loss, that really kind of helps you, of course, move past them in the standings. Now, a really bad stretch in here, if the Clippers lose to this bunch of teams and, you know, really struggle in January, they could put themselves well out of the playoff race. Now, maybe three or four games out of 500 going into February and in kind of a bad spot, because these head-to-head matchups are the best opportunity that you get to make up ground on other playoff teams. Now, still, there's obviously a lot of games to play after January, but the Clippers can either put themselves in the driver's seat or put themselves pretty far behind with a huge mountain to climb. And with the trade deadline looming on February 8th, there's going to be decision time for the franchise in terms of DeAndre Jordan's expiring contract and all of that stuff that's going on. But so this is something that's huge to watch. It's something that we'll keep our eye on going forward. Those matchups to close the month, I think the Clippers pretty much can play the rest of the month 500 in terms of losses to Golden, you know, two losses to Golden State, a loss to Boston, a loss to Oklahoma City, two wins versus Sacramento, a win versus Atlanta, a win versus Memphis. So you stay pretty much 500. Then you've got those big matchups, Denver, Utah, Minnesota, New Orleans, Portland. Those five games, if you go, say, 4-1 in those five games, that could really swing the season in your favor. If you go 1-4, you're probably proving that you don't really belong in the Western Conference playoff picture. So that's a stretch that really sticks out to me as being crucial heading towards the end of the season. Now, to close out the episode, I'm going to respond to some listener requests that I've gotten to revisit the Clippers' options with their two-way players, CJ Williams and Jameel Wilson. But first, let's talk about Saturday. The Clippers host the Warriors in a big matchup, but there's a couple of other big games on Saturday too. NFL wildcard playoff games. Our hometown LA Rams are hosting the Atlanta Falcons, and the Tennessee Titans are taking on the Kansas City Chiefs. You can get all of your NFL wildcard coverage here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Just check out Locked On Rams, Locked On Falcons, Locked On Titans, and Locked On Chiefs for coverage of all of Saturday's NFL playoff action. Now, let's get into this CJ Williams and Jameel Wilson situation. So, last night, CJ Williams was with the Clippers. Obviously, he was with the Clippers. He's in the starting lineup, as he has been recently. And it was his 37th day on the roster for the Clippers. He gets 45. After day 45, he has to go spend the rest of the season in the NBA G League with the Agua Caliente Clippers of Ontario. So, the good news is the Clippers have a pretty friendly schedule coming up in terms of travel, where a travel day counts as a day with the team. So if CJ is, say, on a team flight with the Clippers, then that counts as one of his 45 days. Fortunately, they've got a lot of home games, and their only two road games are back-to-back in Golden State and Sacramento. That means that just for, you know, for example, today on the 3rd, he's down with Agua Caliente. They bring him up tomorrow the 4th. They send him back down on the 5th. They bring him back up on the 6th for a home game. Send him back down on the 7th. Bring him back up on the 8th for a home game. On the 9th, they'll either have him travel with the team up north, which will count as one of his days, or because the trip is only from Los Angeles to Oakland, they could send him back down for the 9th and then have him just take a morning flight the morning of the 10th and meet up with the team for shoot-around. It's less than ideal, but it does save you another game. It basically would allow him to play against the Houston Rockets in a home game on the 15th, whereas if you use that travel day the 9th, then or he can play against the Houston Rockets either way, but if he uses the 9th as a travel day, if that's one of his 45 days, that game against the Rockets is his last game. Whereas if you save that travel day, he'd also be able to play the 17th against Denver because you get into another little homestand where you can send him up and down. So the Clippers can stretch CJ. They can stretch those days until the 17th against the Denver Nuggets. The question is what happens after that? So, and I think probably a big question is, will Danilo Gallinari be back by then? Because once Danilo Gallinari comes back, the need for CJ decreases. Obviously, I think we've probably established that he's played better than Wesley Johnson recently, and I think Doc Rivers obviously trusts him more than he trusts Wesley because he's been starting CJ over Wesley lately. But with Gallinari back in the starting lineup, you're talking about Wesley Johnson as the backup small forward playing 16 or 18 minutes a night at most. How much of an upgrade is it to keep CJ Williams up compared to the other moves that you'd have to make? I think that probably alleviates the pressure a little bit if Gallinari can come back. And even if Gallinari isn't quite back by the 17th, The Clippers do have $120,000 to play with underneath the luxury tax, which means that they could cut CJ from his two-way contract and sign him to a 10-day contract, basically keeping him until January 27th, which would last him through four more games. And then, because they only have $120,000 under the hard cap, underneath the luxury tax, they wouldn't be able to afford a second 10-day contract. So it would just be January 27th is kind of the hard deadline on how long the Clippers could keep CJ Williams without having to dump salary somewhere else. Now, another option is two-way contracts can be traded. CJ Williams is obviously showing that he belongs in the NBA, that he's an NBA player. So it's possible that someone out there is willing to trade for him. Now, you're not going to get very much for him, but you could trade him to another team for maybe one of their two-way players who hasn't used up all of his days yet, and then you could call that guy up for some of his 45 days with the Clippers. You could trade him for a draft pick, you know, maybe a second-round pick. That way the Clippers are at least getting an asset, and CJ gets a chance to go play in the NBA if his new team is able to convert his contract. But, you know, that's one way that it could go down if you are going to keep Wesley Johnson, but it doesn't solve the problem of if your goal is to keep CJ Williams on the Clippers roster for the rest of the season and keep him in the rotation, which I think is the point that we're at right now with how well he's playing, that trading him somewhere else obviously doesn't do that. In order to keep CJ for the full season, the Clippers basically need to move money in a trade. This is something we've talked about before. Now, pretty much any trade that they make would also give them the wiggle room to give Jameel Wilson a rest of season contract in their 15th roster spot, which they may or may not choose to do. They have Jameel Wilson on a two-year, two-way contract, which means if they bump him up, if they convert his contract to a full-season minimum salary contract, then he counts against the 15-man roster not only for the rest of this season, but into next season. If you leave him down, then he continues to not count against the 15-man roster for next season. So you really have to consider how much you're going to use Jameel if you choose to convert him, because if he's not going to be in the nightly rotation, remember, these guys can join the team anyway once the G League season ends. So he'd be back with the Clippers for the last few weeks of the season and into the playoffs if they do end up needing him. But if they're not going to be using him nightly, there's not really much of a reason to convert him and have him lose that two-way status. CJ, on the other hand, the Clippers are using nightly, so he's a guy who it would definitely make sense to convert. Now, in order to move that salary and make the space that the Clippers need in order to convert CJ Williams' contract, there's basically three expendable guys that I think are basically the only three options to move in this kind of deal. The first is Wesley Johnson. Now, clearly, Wesley has lost his value with the team because CJ Williams, a two-way D-League player, has usurped him in the lineup. Wesley still, I think, has some value as a depth piece for the team at both forward spots, but he's not really, you know, he's not a super valuable piece. The problem with Wesley is that he would be very difficult to trade. He makes $5.8 million this season, which would require some tricky salary matching at the deadline. And probably the worst part of it, even more so than that expiring contract, is that he has a player option for $6.2 million next year. With the way his career trajectory is going, it seems like he definitely should exercise that option and stay with the team for $6.2 million. So anyone who you trade him to is not only committing to paying him $5.8 million this year, but also $6.2 million next year. And no one's going to be willing to do that. No one's out there really, really wanting Wesley Johnson. So you would have to give up a draft pick or maybe, you know, a good young player like Sam Decker or someone to have someone be interested in that. I just don't see that being worth it. The easiest guy to move is probably Willie Reed. Now, Willie Reed is on a minimum salary contract. That means that any team can absorb his contract in a trade. They don't need cap room or a trade exception or any of that. All they need is a roster spot and to not be restricted by the hard cap. And he's on a one-year deal, so he doesn't impact anyone's salary situation moving forward. So that makes him really easy to move. The other thing that makes him easy to move is that teams would want him. Willie Reed is a solid backup center. He's been good for the Clippers this season. He just hasn't been quite as good as Montrezl Harrell. And certainly there's going to be teams out there that someone has underperformed, someone is injured. There are teams out there that could use a serviceable seven-footer on an expiring minimum salary contract, and probably there are enough teams out there that are that could use him that you would even be able to get a second-round pick in exchange for him. That I would expect that several teams would be interested. Someone would be willing to give you, you know, maybe a low-end second-round pick for him, and then that would free up the money to convert CJ and Jameel if you choose to. The problem is that Willie Reed has utility. He has value. You know, we just saw last night against the Memphis Grizzlies, Doc Rivers saying that he put Willie Reed in the lineup because Memphis was playing Marc Gasol with their second unit, and he wanted someone bigger than Montrezl Harrell defensively. So obviously Willie's a guy who Doc sees some use in. Now, if the question is Willie versus CJ, I still think the answer is CJ, because I feel like CJ, first of all, is going to be starting for the next few weeks, and even when Gallinari comes back, he hasn't played great this season. He might get injured again. CJ Williams is really valuable injury insurance. Whether he's backing up Gallinari or filling in for him, I think he brings more positive value to the team than Willie Reed does in his current role as the like emergency center, as the third center, or maybe being to be used in certain special matchups. But largely, Montrezl Harrell is that guy. Now, you do run into trouble if you trade Willie Reed just with depth, because if DeAndre Jordan or Montrezl Harrell gets hurt, you don't really have another option at center. Blake Griffin would have to slide over and play center, and the Clippers don't have another big guy on the roster except for Bryce Johnson. It would just be all small ball. What the Clippers can do, though, is if they convert CJ Williams before January 15th, they can sign someone else to replace him in that two-way contract slot. So they could go to, say, Marshall Plumlee, who plays center for the Agua Caliente Clippers. And I'm sure there's someone out there, you know, better or more exciting than Marshall Plumlee, but that's just an example. They go offer the two-way contract to a guy like that, and then he would get a prorated amount of days that he's allowed to be called up. So for half the season, it would be 22 days that he's allowed to spend with the real Clippers. So that would allow you to lose someone, you know, even if Montrezl Harrell goes down for a few weeks, you have a serviceable backup center. Obviously, you're in trouble if Montrezl or DeAndre goes down for the season, but if DeAndre goes down for the season, you're in trouble anyway. And I think that that's probably just the risk that you, I think it's a risk that makes sense to take with regards to the gap that it would allow you to fill at the small forward position, because of how injury-prone Gallinari has been and how effective CJ Williams has been. The last tradable guy in that situation is Bryce Johnson. Bryce Johnson obviously is someone who it hurts way less to give up. He's been down in the G League even when the Clippers only have 10 or 11 healthy bodies on the roster. The team already declined his third-year option. He's just a non-factor. That means that other teams don't want him. He's not as attractive as Willie Reed is. And because Bryce isn't on a minimum salary deal, he's on a rookie scale deal, you have to trade him to someone who either has cap room to absorb his contract or trade exception to absorb his contract. Now, at $1.3 million, that's going to be plenty of teams. It's not like there's only one or two teams where he could land, but it's just another aspect that makes teams not super likely to want to take him. I think that in order to move Bryce Johnson, the Clippers probably would have to give up a second round pick, whereas moving Willie Reed, they can probably get one. But I think probably both should be doable. I think moving Bryce and a second round pick for nothing to sign CJ is a doable move. I think moving Willie for a second round pick and signing CJ is a doable move. I think trading Wesley Johnson is probably something that doesn't just won't get done because of the size of his contract. But the Willie and Bryce options, I think, are legitimate. So I would expect that the Clippers are at least looking into those as they head towards decision time with CJ Williams, but they still do have a couple of weeks. They only have until January 15th if they want to sign someone else to replace CJ in that two-way deal. But even then, 12 days is a long time in the NBA, and they certainly have no reason to move CJ or to bump CJ up before his 45 days are up, because that would just increase his cap hit. So right now, they have, even if they had a trade on the table, they would hold off until January 14th for it. So that's where they are right now. I hope that that's a kind of a good rundown of their situation. That's going to do it for today's episode of the Locked On Clippers podcast. As always, if you have any comments, questions, or feedback, you can hit me up on Twitter at LucasJHan. You can email me lhan.clipsnation@gmail.com. Once again, check out the blog at clipsnation.com. Follow along on Twitter at ClipsNationSBN. And thank you for listening. This is Lucas Han signing off for Locked On Clippers.